Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
It was a historic day 35 years ago today when Live Aid took place.
Yeah.
In our very own city.
Right. Amazing. Here.
And, of course, in England as well, in, at London's Wembley Stadium. So historic, obviously, still lives on. Resurgence in the interest with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, that's kind of a, for a lot of people, that's an entree who are unaware of it.
Like my kids.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of explain to them, you have to understand what a big deal this was at the time. It was huge. It was massive. You know what's interesting, really interesting about it, though, is the fundraising side of it is just meager compared to the kind of fundraising that gets done today, the kind of money that's raised for causes. But at the time, it was huge.
Well, you know what? You could take that same event and execute it today. I mean, I'm saying just in the way it was done, and it would still be impressive in its scope. So time has not made its impact any less.
Yeah, and watching you know, Bohemian Rhapsody and the view of Wembley Stadium and the massive crowd that it was is just impressive as hell.
I have such clear memories of that day, the excitement leading up to it. Now, I was up on Long Island, and I remember watching it all and listening to it through the whole deal and being amazed. And there were little dynamics that they set up throughout the day, like the Phil Collins performing in both locations and all of that stuff. So is he going to be able to do it? It was a smart move to make those little sub-stories going on. Was just massively impressive.
What channel did we watch that on here, Nick? Do you recall?
That's a good question, Case. I don't remember.
Was it on like
MTV? I know aired a lot of it because MTV features some of the things you were talking about, Steve, with the back and forth. And Pierre will talk about this, I'm sure, later today. But YSB had the official coverage in Philly. But Pierre scooped him all the time.
He was like a Navy SEAL getting back there.
And they got pissed, man. Like God, yeah.
They were furious, right?
Yeah, he had this all-access pass, and so he would worm his way backstage and then backstage to the backstage. And so he kept filing these reports that MMR was broadcasting, and YSP got more and more angry at Pierre's broadcast.
Victor Fiorello has released a piece. He sent it over to us from Philly Mag, and Pierre is quoted in, and I only read just an excerpt of it because it's very, very lengthy of people, local people that were integral, and also a lot of the artists that were involved. And Pierre had talked about how he got the All Access Pass was apparently, the promoter, Steve.
Bill Graham?
Graham was running it, and he came in and he saw JFK Stadium and saw that it was kind of a piece of junk. It needed to be cleaned up and brought it to spec. So he started hiring out people that were coming to do it. So Pierre volunteered to do that, and that's how he ended up with a pass.
Oh, wow.
And so he spent a couple of days working on the stadium with everybody. So that gave him access. And then he said, you know, MMR didn't have the broadcast rights, so they had a Winnebago, I guess, out in the parking lot as their broadcast area. And since it's radio, you can kind of theatrically make things appear via, you know, the theater of the mind to be a little bit different than they actually are. And that's what they did. And I think Pierre, God, he got an interview with freaking Jack Nicholson, didn't he?
It was like a minute long.
A really quick, hey, Jack, come over here. Which Jack doesn't do interviews, man.
Wait, are you Pierre?
Yeah.
Big fan.
I remember watching it on MTV. I was in St. Louis at the time. So this, you know, Philadelphia was a forever away for me. It wasn't even a considered thought to be a part of that whole thing. But I remember getting caught up in just how the scope of it.
I mean, I was 10 years old at the time, and it didn't, like, I knew that it was, there was something big that was happening near my home, and we watched it on TV. But you know, here we are 25 years later or whatever. I'm sorry, how long?
35
years later. My headphones just cut out on me in the middle of me talking there. and now I understand, I think, even more so the scope of what was happening. at the time. I've never actually stepped foot inside that stadium in my entire life.
You never said? Really?
You didn't miss much. It was vast. It was big, so they could cram in 100,000 people for the event.
Is that why they chose to do it there of all the other places in this country that they could have, or at least on the East Coast that they could have done it?
You know what? I don't know.
There were two things, from my understanding. It was that and also the quick accessibility to the airport.
Okay. So what I remember about JFK, besides the fact that it was not very pleasant to be inside, and in case you could be in one of those seats anywhere near the top, and you'd be like a mile and a half from the stage, and it was so far away from it. But my dad had season tickets to the Flyers growing up, so we'd be down at the Spectrum a lot, and you would park in the lot for JFK. And the length of time that it took to walk the entire length of JFK to get to the Spectrum was like 15, 20 minutes. It was a vast building.
It's wild. We're looking at a picture here, an overhead shot of JFK Spectrum and the Vet, and none of those stadiums are there anymore.
No.
You know, JFK is sitting it's sitting where the Wells Fargo Center is. And, you know, to our right of it is where Lincoln Financial Field is, and that looks like it's...
The only building on any of those sites is the Wells Fargo Center on where JFK is now. The Spectrum's a parking lot and the Vet is a parking lot.
So to just kind of give you some perspective on it, you know, obviously Bob Geldof, it was his baby. It was his concept and he saw it all the way through. But he had called in favors to everybody he knew.
So it started with Feed the World, right?
Do They Know It's Christmas?
Do They Know It's Christmas? And then progressed to this.
Yeah, that was Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And so they decided to turn that into Live Aid, and it was going to, there was going to be relief for, you know, to fight famine in Africa.
Yes.
That was the whole thing. So it was everybody from Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger and Tina Turner, Hall & Oates, Madonna, U2, Judas Priest, Duran Duran, Queen, obviously, Eric Clapton, Sting, Elvis Costello, The Beach Boys, Bob Dylan, Keith Richards and Ron Wood, David Bowie, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Led Zeppelin had a reunion, The Who and Black Sabbath. And you know what? As I was reading through Victor's piece about the Zeppelin reunion, it kept referring to it as like the horrible Led Zeppelin reunion or the terrible. I really don't remember much about it other than
but
it's apparently it was so bad that Phil Collins had asked that it never ever be shown again.
Wow. The music was off or they just didn't
I guess
jam?
So. Phil Collins asked for that?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
And Phil is a huge, he really, you know, begged them to be a part of it because he was such a huge Zepp fan. And specifically a John Bonham fan. And I went back and watched a little bit of it because you can find it on YouTube, and Victor had included it in the article that he sent over, and it wasn't that great. I remember them doing, I remember watching live when they were doing Stairway to Heaven and thought it was pretty cool, but I don't remember much other than that.
I don't remember thinking it was substandard. I thought it was cool, and I think a lot of people were just swept up in the fact that look at that, that's cool. They've reunited for this,
right.
But there were a number of bands where the mixes were not all they could have been. But I think a lot of people just overlooked that and got caught up in the zeal.
Yep. You know, I'd like to see an overall list of all the bands that played, you know, in London and in Philadelphia, because it just to me seems like it was only the best of the best. And you know, you look at some of these festival concerts that happen now, and they've got, you know, three or four stages, but then you have, like, bands that are playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, like Stinkfist, that you've never heard of before. Or
yeah, no, Stinkfist was at the Live Aid. Yeah.
But these ones, it doesn't seem like they had any stinkers in the lot at all.
All right, so here's the JFK lineup in Philadelphia, if you want that. So, and I don't know if this is in the order that they performed in or not. It kind of looks like it might have been.
I think it is because the kid, the first guy listed, won like a contest or whatever to go out first.
Bernard Watson.
Yeah.
Never heard of him. Joan Baez, then the Hooters, Four Tops, Billy Ocean, Black Sabbath, Run DMC performed.
Billy Ocean into Black Sabbath.
Yeah, right? Rick Springfield, REO Speedwagon, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. That's pretty awesome. Judas Priest, Bryan Adams, The Beach Boys, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, Simple Minds, Pretenders, Santana, Ashford and Simpson, Madonna, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Kenny Loggins, The Cars, Neil Young, Power Station.
Yeah, I love that band.
In fact, Tony Thompson was the other drummer from Power Station that played with Led Zeppelin.
Yep, yep.
I think they had him ready to go in case Phil couldn't make it, but they both ended up playing together. The Thompson Twins, Eric Clapton, Phil Collins, Led Zeppelin, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Duran Duran, Patti LaBelle, Hall & Oates, Mick Jagger with Tina Turner, Bob Dylan, Keith Richards, and Ronnie Wood, and then they did USA for Africa at the end of the whole thing.
Wow, so Neil Young did his own set, CSN did their own set, and then CSNY performed together.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, so CSNY, CSN was earlier, and then Neil Young after the Cars, and then CSNY later on in the day.
Okay.
How much time did they each have? Would they get, like, half hour?
They had an hour each.
Yeah, right?
That was, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So if you look at even Bohemian Rhapsody, and for the their depiction, I believe it's accurate that Queen actually, when they finally agreed to do it, they sort of had to wedge them in. It was a last-minute maneuvering that got them on the bill. So that's cool. But if you look in the time of their performance in the movie, it's, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think that's what everybody got. They got 20 minutes. Here, hang on. I'm looking at the London. See if I can find the full lineup.
I have the list if you want it.
Well, yeah.
It's Adam Ant, Boomtown Rats, David Bowie, Phil Collins, Elvis Costello, Dire Straits, Brian Ferry, Elton John, Howard Jones, Nick Kershaw, Alison Moe, Queen, Sade, Spandau Ballet, Status Quo, Style Council, Sting, U2, Ultravox, Paul Young, Wham, and The Who.
Wow.
It looks like
Wham!
Maybe a couple of bands that weren't mentioned earlier. Did you mention Huey Lewis in the news?
No.
Okay, because it looks like that Chris Christopherson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Who else? Did you say Pretenders? The Pretenders?
I don't know if I said the Pretenders or not.
You did, but Hall & Oates is on there as well. I don't think that got mentioned.
No,
Tears
I did.
For Fears, yeah. Paul Simon.
Okay. Boy George! Why did they call him Girl George?
Was he here? Or was he in...
he was here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Waylon Jennings.
Well, he is. He's from Kensington.
Oh, wow. I did not know. yeah, Waylon Jennings. So, that's, you know, of all these fabled concerts, there was that. There was the US Festival. What else was
Woodstock.
There?
Yeah, obviously. Woodstock. If you're talking about one of the festivals... And this is one for history. I mean, it just, I remember being impressed by the continuity of the entertainment value of it. That I thought even people, it's actually what turned me on to Sade. I was not.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh wow, that's a pretty awesome performance. And, yeah. And you know, Howard Jones and the people you knew were going to be good. Obviously The Who and stuff like that. But it was an amazing thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a definitive a la Woodstock movie put together of Live Aid?
Not that I know of.
Right?
I don't know if they had the, you know, thought to film all of it.
To chronicle it that way?
Something like that. They should have.
They've got to have enough footage to put it together.
Let's see. The 16-hour Live Aid marathon was watched by an estimated global audience of $1.5 billion, raised more than $140 million. So it was definitely big. Some of the stories, like Bob Geldof said that he said, I was frightened that nobody would show up. I had no contracts. I had a very sore back, and my wife used to put towels underneath the sheets in the bed because I used to have cold sweats with fear. And as the
very nervous about things about how it would turn out. And I remember one night my wife pooped in the bed. And I said, this has got to be a bad sign.
And listen to this, he said, and as the day wore on, my back got more and more painful, and Bowie came over and said, lie down. So I lay down, and David Bowie gave me a massage.
Wow.
He said, best massage by a rock star that I ever had.
That scene in, again, you have to keep referencing Bohemian Rhapsody because it, you know, it's the most current depiction of the whole thing, but where he's... They're worrying at the beginning of Queen's performance, and maybe it's apocryphal, but that the donations started coming in fast and furiously as the set caught fire, you know?
Yeah. Here's the clip of the Jack Nicholson interview that Pierre snagged. It's 30 seconds long. That's all he had, but this is it. Here we go.
We're backstage now with Jack Nicholson. Jack, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling very good today. Very good.
What did it feel like to introduce the whole proceedings today?
Well, it was a little bit mind-boggling. I sort of lost my place, but I had the good sense to write it down before I went out there, so it went okay.
I think Philly loved you today.
Real proud to do it. Privilege.
Are you going to be here for the whole day hanging out?
I think so, yeah. It seems like it's a lovely event. Everybody seems to be in great spirits, and I'm just here to add mine to theirs.
That's awesome. Jack, thanks so much for talking with us at WMMR.
My pleasure.
Dude. Excited to see Rupert Holmes and have him sing that tequila song that I love so much. Come again? I'm a big fan of Rupert Holmes, and I love that pina colada song. Oh.
See ya.
I'm going to go over here to Chris. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, bud?
All right, pretty good.
So apparently you worked Live Aid?
Yeah, I worked the concerts. I went to Hahnemann College, Medical College, and turned into Hahnemann University. And we actually were volunteers for a company that handled that. So we got to see, you know, the concerts for free, and, you know, that was one of the...
That's a good deal. So you were handling was there like a triage set up? I mean, with that many people?
There were two triages, one on either side of the stadium, under the seats. There were doctors, there were nurses, and then there were medics like us. You would see them with their shirts with crosses on the front and back. And we were walking through the crowd, and our job was to find anybody who was in trouble, like OD victims. So we were taught to walk around. It was kind of funny. We would kick them in the feet.
Yeah.
We were told not to stand over them and shake them. And if you heard, okay, he's good, you know, if you got a response.
Yeah.
And
but they had to say that one phrase. Oh, yeah.
That's a secret phrase.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. So you had to find passed out people and kick them in the feet?
Yes. Yeah, it was really hot. We just wanted to make sure that everybody made it out of the concert.
I remember them spraying the fire.
Water, yeah.
Yeah, over. It was pretty wild. It was a very hot day.
It was. And there were 85 of us, plus the medical teams on either side. So while we would find somebody with no response, one of us had a giant red flag, and we would hold it up in the air above the crowd. And there were people across on both sides with binoculars looking for those flags. And
wow.
Once they saw the flag, they would send a stretcher team out.
How would you negotiate thousands and thousands of people jammed in on top of each other to get those stretchers through? If someone was in a really precarious situation, I mean, times of the essence, you know, it must have been damn near impossible.
It was tough, but, you know, you know that if you don't do anything, you know, something very horrible, something very bad can happen to this person.
Yeah.
People were accommodating. They did move out of the way. They would stumble or stagger to the right or left, and they would make
it. Chris, anybody die at that event?
Not that I know, thank God. There were, we would, you know, the horseshoe in the back of the JFK, we would send people one every five rows down. Every five rows down would be a medic, and we would walk around the horseshoe.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
You know, around the stands to make a sweep.
Right.
And also on the field. We had one guy, I think he was tripping. He didn't have any clothes on, so we didn't know what to do with him. So we grabbed the blanket, one side on the other, and scooped him up, rolled him, and picked him up and took him off.
Wow.
My name's Pierre.
It's funny. Wow. Interesting. Chris, do you have any photos from that day?
I have some photos. I have. I still have the shirts with the logo on them.
That's cool.
You know?
That is cool.
Yeah, it was. It was a good time. We worked the other concerts, too. The Stones concert. That was overnight. So we would have, like, the little go-kart and, on the outside. We would run around the outside and make sure everybody was...
You're driving a go-kart!
It was crazy. Because they thought, you know, we were like, you know, here comes the man. And we're like, no, we don't care as long as you're okay. You know,
right.
And they understood that we were just there to hook them.
Interesting.
We're losing you a little bit. So.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
The cart.
It's interesting because you think back about these shows that took place, you know, forever ago, 35 years ago, and I don't think about how many hammered people were there.
That's one of the first things I thought about.
No,
because I do remember it being a really hot day, a really sunny hot day, and I, you know, watched it on my TV. I didn't have any air conditioning in my house, but again, I was 10 at the time, so, you know, it wasn't as bad, but again, you know, I was 10, so... I didn't I didn't drink. I didn't know about partying, and it wasn't until like a little bit later on. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a concert where people just go, full, you know,
go and hey, it's an all day event. Let's get hammered before it even starts. Let me go to Rich. Hi, Rich. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Rich?
Not much. How you doing?
Doing wonderful. Why'd you call in?
Well, I did all the drum sets for Live Aid there.
What do you mean you did all the drum sets?
I painted all the drum sets.
Wow.
Me and a guy.
Did they ask you to do that?
No, we, I worked for Tama Drums, Ibanez Guitars in Hoshino, USA in Bent Salem. And me and a guy, Brian Whalen, were the custom painters there.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
And they brought in, so they had custom kits for everybody? Nobody brought their own equipment?
No, we did. We did 8 all-white drum sets and 1 black kit for one particular band.
Okay. All right, yeah, I guess so, because moving all that equipment around would have been a logistical nightmare if everybody was bringing all their own stuff all the time.
Yeah, it was all set up. They were all basically backup kits for... But they had a revolving stage, so it was kind of like there was one on either side of the stage.
So that's actually a pretty amazing thing if you stop and think about it, with the way musicians are and the precision we see them at the various RBQs, how precise they are with the equipment that they have and the stuff that they're used to playing. To convince those bands to play preset kits like that had to be a tall order.
Well, yeah, like I said, you had 2 sets, so it was one on one side, and the other guys, their tuner would come in, and the guy that was their roadie would come on and tune their setup for them while the others were performing. So it was all ready for them when they came out.
All right, so I'm going to be a drum nerd. 1985, those were probably Tama Superstar kits, right?
Yes, they were.
Okay, that's what I thought. I used to have that.
Oh, did you?
My old drum set.
The actual kits, though, we didn't, because it was we were on a tight deadline, and we didn't actually paint the Africa logo on there. We had a team of guys that were in there. Mm-hmm. they were actually decals.
Okay.
Put on there.
All right. So, during the show, were you there because you had a part in it? So were you backstage?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What's some cool stuff you saw that you remember?
Well, the Hard Rock Cafe was set up right close to the stage, in a tent down there. And I was back and forth from that watching them set up. And it's just...
You got to watch them set up the Hard Rock Cafe.
No. I would watch the performers get on the stage before it revolved around. And then...
Oh, that's cool.
And then go back to the Hard Rock Cafe and have a couple drinks and then come back and... Do it all over again.
Man, that's the way to go. I mean, and you were right. You know, that's a point in history, and you had sort of VIP access.
I've been to so many concerts, and that was quintessentially the best time that I ever had.
So, Rich, who did you have any encounters with any of the bands? I mean, personal.
I didn't get into that. It was just really overwhelming, actually, just to be back there. It was almost like its own little city into itself and back there. And there was so much to just walk around and see. You can't fathom it. And you're just taking it in all at one time. And I was a young kid at the time. So I'm like, oh my God, look at this. Who's that?
Yeah. Oh, it's the Thompson twins.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Rich.
It's really wild to look up here and look at the set list and the set times, Preston. Yeah. I mean, especially, I guess maybe even just leading up into REO Speedwagon Press. Look at those set times and the amount of songs. Like, some bands came up and just did 2 songs and they were done.
Yeah. And you're looking at the time here. And the reason they're so early is because they were doing it at the same time as the show in England.
Right.
But which is a 6-hour difference.
Concerts started before 9 a.m. Here in Philadelphia. That's wild.
Yep, and there were still people tripping and wasted by the time the whole thing got started.
If that became... Could you see yourself ever attending a rock concert that started at, like, 8 a.m.?
Yeah, I mean, I did.
Where?
Yeah, like, Judas Priest only played 3 songs. CSNN played 3 songs. One of them was Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. That's, like, an 8-minute-long song, though. But, REO Speedwagon did 2 songs.
Roll with the changes, Preston.
Yeah, your tune. Rick Springfield did 3. Yeah, that's pretty wild. So real quick sets in and out.
Dude, Rick Springfield did 3 songs, and not one of them was Jesse's Girl. What a jip.
Really?
Yeah.
Love Somebody, State of the Heart, and Human Touch.
I came here for Jesse's girl. Yeah, it's the only thing I came here for. Yeah.
I just donated to Live Aid. I want to have my money back. Rip off.
He wasn't going deep into his library at the time. He just wanted to play his current stuff, I guess. Come on, man.
Like to play a deep cut of my new album?
Billy Ocean did both of his hits.
Yeah.
Caribbean Queen or Caribbean Queen.
I'm going home now.
And Loverboy. Look who introduced Black Sabbath, Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who are some of the other celebrity introductions? So Bryan Adams was introduced by Jack Nicholson, who we heard that clip from Pierre when he interviewed him.
Marilyn McCoo introduced the Beach Boys.
Who the hell is that?
Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis.
Yeah. I've forgotten the songs they did, Steve, but I know the name.
I blocked them out myself.
I know the names.
Bo Diddley.
Let's see. Chad was 15 years old while he was there. I'll go to him. Hey, Chad, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hey, bud. So you were 15 and you were at Live Aid, right?
Yeah, it's Jack. And, I was 15. I don't know, Chad.
Okay.
I don't know.
You probably had to fight that your whole life, right? Everyone thinks I'm Chad, but I'm Jack. Chad. Remember, I'm Jack.
Thank you.
From Touch Zone Pictures, a man always called Chad turns out to be Jack. And then a therapist enters his life. We can do something about that. Ask people to call you Jack.
Oh, okay. Done. All right, anyway, Jack, you were going to say.
The most memorable part was the heat. It was so hot, it was ridiculous. They were carting people off of that field all day long.
And was it 9-hour drive down to Kentucky, hon? Because, I mean, honestly, if you think about it, Chad, you had that heat, which was oppressive. I remember the day just up in New York feeling, you know, it was. I think we were in sort of a heat wave at that point. Then you're surrounded by all that body heat. It must have been unbelievable.
It was crazy. It was just, the humanity was amazing. You turned around. I was fortunate enough to be pretty close to the stage in the middle of the field. And you turned around and you just saw this soup bowl of humans. And they're constantly, you saw guys trotting stretchers off of the field.
Jeez.
And the guy next to me, I'm 15 years old. The guy next to me is drinking out of a Prestone antifreeze.
Yeah. And he was like, probably drinking Prestone antifreeze.
Well, I guess he saw me staring at him, and he looked at me, and he was like, "It's not antifreeze." I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "You want some?" So I said, "Okay." Yeah. So he said, "Here you go, Chad." And then,
what was it? Any idea what you tasted?
It was vodka. It was
okay.
Wow. Hey,
so Jack, so you were 15. Who took you there? Were you there with any adults? Did you go with friends? What was your?
I was with a friend. He was probably 17, and because he could drive.
I remember being like,
that was normal.
I remember being 14 and my parents dropping me off at a concert, at a Rush concert. Here you go, have a good time. Never happened.
Right. No.
Never happened. No way.
No way.
No.
No way.
And they would let kids that age in? What was the going price for the average ticket at Live Aid? Do we know?
That's a good question.
I think I paid $24.
$24. I believe it.
I'm pretty sure.
How many hundreds would that cost you now? What would you expect to pay
value
for this amazing record? Thanks.
Face value would probably be like $350.
But you would pay $800 to $1,000 if you had to, probably. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you guys know the story of Chevy Chase and the kidney announcement?
No.
So a couple of listeners texted this in. Apparently, Chevy quieted the entire stadium, and there's audio, if Marissa can find it. It's on YouTube. But Chevy Chase quieted the entire stadium to announce that this kid, Stephen Fallon, he was on a kidney donor waiting list, and they found a kidney for him. So Chevy Chase announced it to the stadium at Live Aid.
Wow.
That there was a kidney waiting for this kid at Massachusetts General Hospital.
There's a gentleman over here drinking antifreeze. He's offered up his kidney. That's amazing, sir. Thank you. Apparently both of them have shut down right now, and they're just primed for the taking.
So the antifreeze
we got a guy over here drinking STP. He'll see your kidney.
No, wow. So the kid left the stadium, left.
Wow. Was he searching for him? Is that why he announced? Were they searching for him?
Yes, made the announcement. They left the stadium, went to the airport, flew to Boston, and he was at the hospital by mid-afternoon, where he was immediately admitted and prepared for transplant surgery, which was scheduled for the next
day. And the kid also said, he goes, I'm going to leave, but hang on one second. Rick Springfield's going to do Jesse's groin.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay here for that first.
I feel awful sick, but I'd really love to hear Jesse's girl. God damn it. I wasn't going to play that.
We have a picture of a Live Aid ticket. It was $35. $35 and 35 years ago today.
Yay!
How about that?
What is this?
It's this is the announcement. Yeah. All right. At JFK Stadium in Philadelphia, Chevy Chase got on the mic, got everybody to quiet. Apparently, there was a kid in the audience there that they had a kidney replacement. They had a kidney transplant ready for him.
And he needed to get to the airport.
All right. Here we go.
Steve Fallon is here. We would like him to go over to that balloon over there. Steve Fallon, we have found a donor in Boston. Please go to that balloon.
Dude.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's a little known story I had never heard about before. That's pretty damn cool.
He's been able to fashion a temporary kidney out of churros that he just purchased. But so he got the notification that there was a kidney ready to go, and there's footage of the guy leaving. That's amazing.
Yeah, he went right to the airport and then flew right to Boston.
And he made it back in time for the Thompson Twins.
They were here. Yeah, they were here. Nick, can you do me a favor? Because we have a guest on the line who we're going to talk to, but can you research and see if he's still alive or if there's any information about that person? Because that's a pretty crazy
story. That's amazing.
Wow. All right. Well, 35 years ago today, right here in our city, Live Aid took place. I'm sure Pierre back today? Or was he on
vacation? He has to be. Yeah, he's doing the whole thing. Right, yeah.
We'll get some stories from him because he was backstage. He was at the whole event and should have some really cool stories to share, not sell.
I'm going to sell you some great radio today. The next song is going for $25.
Get the whole Preston and Steve show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.